Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy. Get your motor
running. Fender Bender on Joy 94.9, revving up the weekends with news and views on all things motoring.
Yes, good afternoon. It is 2 p.m. on a Saturday afternoon in this fine, fine city we call Melbourne, which means only one thing, and that is another edition of Fender Bender here on Joy 94.9. Thank you so much to Pete Dillon for carrying out another cracking episode of Cravings, talking about beer, which is something very close to my heart. However, beer does not mix with cars and driving, and that's what we're here to discuss for the next hour, so do stay with us. You can get in touch, 0427-JOY-949 is the text, or you can email on air at joy.org. If you've got anything to say on the subject of motoring or driving or cars, we'd love to hear from you. Now, I know I've done this a few weeks in a row now, so do not readjust. Do not tune out or into anything else. Tim Nicholson, the producer and queen of Fender Bender, is currently at Sydney Airport waiting to get on a plane to Germany to drive something which we will talk a little bit later in the show. So for today, I am holding the fort. My name is Daniel Gardner, but I am not alone. I'm not alone. I'm with three splendid examples of human beings. The first one, I have to say thank you so much, Andrew, for panelling in my absence of any technical ability. Normally when people let me near machines, smoke comes out of them, so that's very good. that very sexy voice at the other end of the desk is Fionn Torr, writer for Car Sales. Thank you so much for being with us, Fionn.
Good to be here, as always.
Yes, now you were on the show last week, weren't you?
I was.
You're becoming quite the regular.
I do enjoy it.
It's great to have you. And the third or fourth, depending on how many you count me as in the studio, is Alistair Riddell. Thank you so much for joining us, Alistair. Alistair is the resident Fender Bender, and there's a language warning to this episode today, a shitbox expert.
Thank you for having me as well.
Absolute pleasure to have you. Now, we will talk a little bit more about the shitbox rally a little bit later, but it involves basically taking your life in your hands and driving a ridiculously long distance across Australia.
Pretty much sums it up, yeah. Doing silly things in the name of charity.
Fantastic. Good, good. Thank you all for being with us. Let's kick this off with, we're going to be talking about news, first of all, international and local, but this week, something very special happened.
It's the biggest news.
I think that's fair to say.
Yeah.
That is fair enough, isn't it, Fionn?
Is this the most important car launch of the year, perhaps?
Well, the way in which they did it and the amount of hype surrounding it would suggest exactly that, yes. Mm. We are, of course, talking about Mazda's MX-5, the venerable, now 25 years old, 26 years old.
It is getting on.
The MX-5 was revealed in a quite unusual way in that people were so... obviously, the MX-5, its look is a big thing. Mm. You know, the way that the MX-5 looks is very important. The way it drives is equally as important. But because people were so excited to see it, they didn't unveil it in just one country. They did three countries simultaneously.
That's going to cost a lot of money, isn't it?
Well, now, do we think they can make it back?
Oh, they'll make it back in spades.
Of course they will.
Time's over.
You know why? Because it looks fantastic. I think this new MX-5 is just... it's hot.
It absolutely is. Now, I was talking to the head honcho of Mazda on a recent launch. That car we'll be talking about a little bit later in the show. But Martin Bendis is a fabulous chap. And he, over dinner one evening, I spoke to him and I said, there's a few artist renderings. You know, people have tried to do a Photoshop job and work out what the MX-5 is going to look like. And he laughed at me. He said, we've seen them all and none of them are even close.
Yeah. And it's true. They weren't, were they?
Not by a country mile. And Mazda's design language is Kodo, which they're applying to all their cars. I think the MX-5 is one of the last to get it. So people had applied that design logic to the nose of a convertible two-seater, and they were all wrong.
Mm.
And I'm pleased they were.
Yeah, yeah. But it's you can jump online, Google it. You can go to Go Auto or Motoring Car Sales, any of the websites we work for, and have a look at this car and see what you think.
That was very diplomatic.
Yeah. Because basically what they've done is they've sort of kept the shape. It's still sort of, it's very compact, it's very neat looking, but they've sort of pinched the headlights a bit, and there's been a little bit of controversy about the new headlights. Do they look a little too small? Do they look a little bit beady? So there's been a little bit of pushback from the public in terms of the front end design, but for me, I love it. I want one.
To me, it looks like they've reimagined the kind of the classic kind of the Mark II and the earlier ones, rather than going by the slightly kind of larger, heavier Mark III.
Yeah.
So this looks like a real kind of sharp, mean Mark II that's been resculpted.
It's an exciting looking thing. I like it. Now, one of the previous problems that they had with the styling, and for that matter, the demographic that buy an MX-5, is that the styling might have been a little bit too effeminate, a little lacking in aggression. And I think with this new design, they have certainly addressed that, and it certainly has a far more purposeful look.
A little bit more machismo.
What was that?
I think it's an Italian word.
It was lovely. If you have any other Italian words, then please do let us hear them throughout the show, Fionn.
We'll see. But yeah, just quickly finishing up on MX-5, for those that might not know, the MX-5 is basically a tiny two-seater convertible, and it's one of the most iconic convertibles in the world. And I think they're coming up to 1 million global sales. So
is that
very
right?
Popular, yeah.
Wow.
People love this car.
I've driven every version of the MX-5 to date, with the exception of the one that's just launched, and they have always been a fabulous car to drive.
Rear-wheel drive, really low balance to the ground, yeah.
It's a purist's car. It's not fabulously powerful.
It's not quick.
It's not very fast. It's just rewarding, and that really is rewarding to look at, rewarding to drive. Now, with on the styling still, do we think there's a little bit of ripping off happening at all?
This is what people are saying. Me personally, I don't think it's too bad. People are saying Z4, they're saying Z4. Honda S2000.
I am saying F-Type, bum.
F-Type, yeah, I've heard that too. And I can sort of see that, but I don't know. I feel like I need to see it in the flesh. I need to see it in the metal before I go, they've ripped everyone off.
You're absolutely right.
But fair call.
How frequently do we see cars in other renderings, you know, the computer images.
Yeah, computer generated.
And when you see them in the flesh, they're completely different. They're sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse. So totally agree, the jury's out on this one. But early signs are good. And actually, it has to be said that if they have ripped off a few designs with this one, then it wouldn't be the first time they've done that with the very same car. The first MX-5 was a complete rip-off of the Elan, the Lotus Elan.
Well, yeah, indeed.
So I was actually kind of expecting
there
to look
similarities.
A lot like something else.
Yeah. Absolutely iconic shape in its own right as well.
Absolutely, yeah. And isn't it funny that when the first MX-5 came out, the Elan was a classic that everyone wanted. And now this fourth generation, forgive me, has come out. The first MX-5 is a classic that everyone wants.
Yeah.
What is that? Is that Hakuna Matata or what?
It is a little bit. Or as Mazda would say, Jinba Itai.
Wow. You really are our international representative today.
Apparently that means being one with the car, so
I'm not going to stop smiling about that. All okay, one other reveal that we had this week was the Land Rover Discovery Sport. Now, this is another car from the good people at Land Rover, Range Rover, Jaguar. Who have actually been doing some really surprising things in the way of styling recently. Now, this one is sort of a replacement for the Freelander. It's that kind of size with similar sort of appeal, and it's taken on a lot of the design of its bigger brothers, the Range Rover Sport.
Yeah. And a little bit of Evoque, too. And if anyone's familiar with the Evoque, it's a very stylish vehicle. It's got a touch of that in it, too. This is basically
family resemblance through all of them now that they're
in the same mold. That's the way car makers seem to be going. A lot of them, they want to sort of have that family resemblance. And but just for the record, this car is it's ostensibly a 5-seater SUV. Sort of, you know, you can take it off road, but they're calling it a 5+2, so you can have two extra seats in the back. So 7-seater.
I like that when car manufacturers use that expression, because it's not hiding anything. You know, if you said it was a 7-seater, you'd say that's absolute crap. It's not a 7-seater.
And you try to sit in that third row seats, and your knees are puncturing your brain.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Designed for occasional use or for children, but not precisely. A 7-seater. Yeah.
They did that. They revealed that in a really interesting way, didn't they? Before we'd seen the actual look of the exterior of the car, they wrapped one up in that vinyl coating.
Oh, and teaser campaign.
Yeah, but it was crazy. It was like I had an X-ray vision of the back of the car. They'd sort of peeled it open like a sardine can. You could see the two little back seats in there, even though you couldn't actually see the real look of the outside of the car. Clever idea.
Very.
Nice little thing. Now then, we have a couple of other things to talk about, releases and stuff that we've seen in the past week or two. However, we're going to take a little break. We'll be back just after this. Stick around. This is Joy 94.9.
Fender Bender, guaranteed to leave skid marks.
Oh, dear. Well, that's unfortunate.
We were.
Sorry about that. We should say Fender Bender, which you're listening to on Joy 94.9, contains safe driving only. So there really shouldn't be any skid marks left anywhere at all. For fear or reckless driving.
Yeah. The ones on the road we're talking about?
I think we should move on
avoid
swiftly.
Avoid skid marks
yes.
in general.
You're absolutely right, yes. Sticking with the news, we were talking about things that we've seen globally. One other thing worth probably a quick mention is Audi. Very, very popular car, the A6. We've just seen what the new midlife facelift is going to look like. It's still a handsome car. It's been tweaked. It's got new headlights, tail lights. It's got modified lightly front and rear bumpers. It's just a refresh, and it's also got a couple of modifications to its engines. Europe only at the moment. They do have one interesting thing they've mentioned, though, with it. In Europe, they have two engines, a petrol and diesel, called the Ultra, which is the most efficient of all.
Ultra.
So there's a 1.8 TFSI Ultra, and there's also a 2-litre TDI Ultra. And the latter does, I think I'm right saying, 4.7 litres per 100 kilometres A6.
Big car, that's impressive.
So isn't ultra efficient.
Yes, not ultra irresponsible.
Ultra heavy.
Not at all. So, yeah, now, we don't know whether Australia is getting those. It's unlikely because we're a nation of petrol heads and we favour power over economy.
V8s, please.
But why not? And, of course, there are two V8 A6s to choose from in the form of the S6 and the RS6.
Oh, that RS6. Oh,
noise.
We can talk about that engine a little bit later because I'm actually driving one with that engine at the moment.
Oh, get out.
So there you go. A6 is coming back. It'll be here in March next year. Engines and specifications yet to be announced, but unlikely we'll get those very, very efficient ones.
And that's about they started about $80,000, those cars, so they're pretty high-end luxury
things. Yeah. But they sell a few.
They do.
People seem to like them, for good reason. They're a great car.
Yeah.
Now then, one other thing. Citroën DS Divine.
It's divine.
Is it really, though? Is it really, Fionn?
It kind of is, yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's a concept car, yeah?
It is at the moment. So
it's not in reality, but they've built one or they've designed this funky-looking, futuristic...
What does it remind you of? From that angle there, we're looking at this on our screens here. For me, that's got a little bit of Lexus front end. It's kind of got a little... Actually, maybe a bit Audi A3.
Audi Q-series front for that swapping grill.
Yeah. I'm almost seeing an Audi TT with the rump sliced off.
Oh, dear.
That would be painful.
Yeah.
And then the interior is just something entirely different.
The interior is...
Cross-hatch roof. It's just a bizarre-looking contraption.
Yeah,
there's... That online.
You should definitely have a look at that online. And if you feel like sending in an email or an SMS...
You absolutely can. 0427-JOY949 is the text number. Or you can email onair@joy.org.au. Let us know what you think of this Citroën DS Divine. Do you actually think it's divine or do you think it's a bit of a joke? Because we all know that concepts like this, they rarely make it through to production exactly as you see them. And this one has so many radical features that it's very unlikely we're going to see... You know, like you say, Ali, that roof is bizarre. It's kind of... It's like almost like an atrium, you know, like some kind of stadium or something. It's bizarre. Yeah. Anyway, worth a mention, we thought, didn't we?
Definitely.
Now, one other thing I'd like to talk about. Fionn, we had a little chat about this before. Bernie Eccleston, the train robber.
Yes, this is the big chief of F1.
Yes.
Bernie Eccleston. And most people, well, not most, but people who follow F1 and motorsports would know Bernie.
Yeah, a very famous man. He has said something... inflammatory, as always.
Very.
He thinks the main man of Russia, Vladimir Putin, is an all right guy. He's come out and he's given
good
more
guy.
More support to a nation. Now, I don't want to get all political on Fender Bender here. This is not the time or the place for it. But really, the man has gone to. I mean, does he think he can get away with these kind of remarks because he's just fabulously wealthy and owns Formula One?
Well, look. I kind of... It's not that I disagree. He's entitled to his opinion, but part of me thinks maybe he's come out and said these sort of things because there's an F1 race in Russia, and maybe he's trying to grease the wheels a little bit there.
I think you're right. I think you're right. And so what we really...
But I don't agree with it.
Of course. Look, anyone sat within these four walls are not going to agree with it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think what we have to do as a countermeasure is we need to... perhaps some sort of crowdsource funding. Start our own F1 team.
Kickstarter. Yep.
Absolutely. And our team colours will be the rainbow. What do we think about that? I think that would go down.
That could gain momentum.
I think so.
Could do. Still be giving money to Bernie, though.
Ah, okay, right. True. That is the... All right, yeah. Okay. I didn't think that through very well.
Maybe we could put a caveat on it. There's some sort of, you know...
Just park them outside the Formula One track, not actually drive them or get them dirty. Yeah. Or maybe Bernie's just a fan of anyone that wrestles bears and shoots tigers.
And walks around topless.
Well, I saw a picture of him recently, and he was sort of in a sort of seated position.
Mm.
And there was a fair bit of a smuggler gut coming on there.
Ooh.
I know.
He prided himself on his ripped body.
I reckon someone needs to put in a few hours at the gym.
Oh, there it is.
I built that up especially for it, didn't I?
Yeah, well said.
Yes. Difficult man to talk about. So I reckon we move on. Mm. Let's just forget anything you ever said.
Yes.
Now then, there was an interesting car launch this week up in Queensland, I believe the launch happened.
I heard about this.
Yeah, now interesting. We particularly like to know if anyone's listening about if you are a fan of ridiculously large pickups and utes. Ford's F-Series launched in this country. Now, it's the first time it's happened officially because they've traditionally been left-hand drive only.
Mm.
But this one is converted by a company called Performax, and it is...
In Queensland.
Yeah, where actually you could argue these cars probably do have a place.
Yeah, yeah.
But F-250, come on.
It's America's
huge.
Biggest selling car or vehicle.
Yeah, yeah.
Got to be a lot of people that want them.
Yeah, but do they want them for the right reasons?
What wrong reasons can you have for having a gigantic tank on the roads that probably drinks... 20-odd litres per 100, and it's going to be fun.
Crush compact cars as you just drive
straight
over them.
Over Prius.
Yeah, yeah. But these cars are huge, just for those who might be thinking, what's a Ford F-250 or F-150? It's basically a giant ute that barely fits on the road. They are so wide and so big. They're phenomenal. Did you drive one?
I did not. I've not driven one of these. The closest I've come to driving one was I was following one... I was at a drive day for the Tom car, which is a completely opposite thing.
It's
a little all-terrain vehicle. And there was one of the guys in the fleet who were going to the test track was driving in... it wasn't an F-250. I think it was a Dodge Ram, which is exactly the same system.
Same thing.
Ridiculous. It's the competitor.
Yeah.
And it was one of those ones that had two wheels on each side of the rear axle.
The dualies, or the dualies, as they call them in the USA.
Exactly. And the guy was driving it quite competently. Obviously, he was used to it. But there were several moments where he had no choice. He had to actually drive over the pavement. He actually hopped the curb onto the pavement with one set of wheels because it simply wouldn't fit on the road.
Yeah.
And, you know, do you really need that?
It's a good city car. Great for parking.
Fantastic. Yep. Steps into
do you think it's got idle stop?
Yeah. They're only about 6 metres long, aren't they? So
yeah, what were we talking about? The A6.
Slots into
the A6 earlier does 4.7 litres to 100 kilometres. How many litres do you think this uses every kilometre?
I do remember they're going to bring in the F450 as well, which is the biggest one.
Oh,
or
serious?
One of the bigger ones. And it can tow 16 tonnes. Or is it 14 tonnes it can tow. So people are buying them to tow huge amounts. They buy them, they might be towing horses or large boats, that sort of thing. But they wouldn't be doing this if there wasn't a market for them. So clearly they've got their business case and people want them.
That is
ADR compliance on it. That can't have been a cheap process. So.
You are absolutely right. Yes, we can talk about absurd cars ad nauseum on this show, as we frequently do. You know, I'll have a rant about SUVs frequently. And we were talking about premium car prices here and how much they're so much higher in Australia compared to the rest of the world. As you rightly say, they wouldn't be if people didn't keep paying the money.
Yeah. People want them, and they'll pay for them. And
so, if you want to make a difference, just talk with your wallet. Don't buy, anything.
Yeah, ride a bike.
That's not going to work, is it? Really? No. Now, on to security matters.
Oh, political again.
It is. Well, this is very political, actually. Mm-hmm. But it's our kind of politics. It's car politics. Previously, the PM and... I do mean Prime Minister.
The Australian PM?
Yes. Has to drive around in a very secure car, for obvious reasons.
Bulletproof.
Previously, a little bit more than bulletproof.
Really?
Yeah. Previously...
Acid-proof.
It was... Now you're just being inventive. Yes. Swarm of wasp-proof.
Yes, killer wasps. Watch out for them.
Most cars generally are wasp-proof, I've found. The Prime Minister today has been driving around in a Holden Caprice C1, which is specially modified by a company called BAE Systems to be, as you say, bulletproof and actually quite explosion-proof as well. But just last week, we found out that they have made the decision to not buy Holdens anymore. They've actually given the contract to BMW.
What do we think about that?
Well,
end of local manufacturing in many areas.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And the question is, you know, even if they wanted to keep buying a Holden, well, they probably couldn't, could they? Unless it's going to be coming from overseas anyway, and then that's just as bad as buying a BMW. Mm. Now, look, I'm remaining impartial on this, because if you're buying a car that has to potentially save someone's life, you're not going to really put anything before safety. And if they think the BMW can do a better job, or is going to be more readily available, or easier to maintain in any way, then obviously they've gone for those reasons. Mm. It will cost you over $500,000 each, and they have ordered 9.
Bargain.
So there we go.
Fenderbender's getting one then, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to cruise around in it tonight. Just get people to shoot guns at us.
Where do you go at what night?
I grew up in Frankston, so we'll just go to Mum's place.
Oh, wow. I'm not sure even BMW Security 7 Series can handle Frankston.
That's true. Yeah.
It is an amazing car. I met the guy who's responsible for selling them worldwide, and it is called... It's based on a 7 Series. It's made on the production line where all other 7s are, and that is the key difference between the 7 Series and all others, and that is all other vehicles are retrofitted. So you complete the car, and then you put it somewhere else, and you start fitting all the thick glass and stuff. BMW rolls off the production line finished. It can take 2 direct grenade hits, 2 hand grenades on the roof.
But not 3.
Well,
so it's a bit of a problem
there. Hopefully you're out of
there
by the third. If you can't move after 2 grenades have blown up on your roof, then you probably need to be a little bit more aware of your surroundings, Fionn.
Here's my question, though. Okay, so they've gone to BMWs. Fair enough. They might be safer. But, you know, do they do donuts like the Holden? You know, do they have the V8 grunt? What sort of engines are they running?
They've got the 6-litre V12.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. That's enough. Yeah.
But, ooh, these are powerful engine, plenty of torque. They do add over an extra ton of weight to the car by putting in its various bulletproof and grenade-proof panels. You can have some options as well.
So we're talking about a 3-ton car?
Pretty much.
Wow.
Yeah, 3-ton, $550,000. Bargain. You can have some options if you like, Finn. Mm-hmm.
What have I get?
Okay, for the paltry sum of €20,000, mm-hmm, you can have a integrated fire extinguisher system. So that if anything happens... Yeah, absolutely. Why not? You can also have a 2-hour oxygen supply. So that if anyone's got a noxious... If anyone has let slip outside the car, then it will sniff it and it closes the vents and you've got 2 hours of oxygen.
But
€20,000.
If someone cuts the cheese in the car and they've got the old...
that's
not
when
good.
The ejector seat
that's
comes.
That's when Tony Abbott is closing. Just...
yeah. And we all have heard that about Tony. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And finally, my favourite option on the BMW 70 Security is a pyrotechnic emergency exit windscreen. So if you've been boxed in either side of the car, you can hit a button above the windscreen and it will blow the seal with explosives and you kick the windscreen out with your feet and off you go.
That's 007 sort of stuff.
There we are.
Like if someone has let the wasps in.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Lower the screen.
Wonderful, Ali. There we go. So the government, yes, has bought 9 BMW bulletproof cars. We're going to have to take a little break, but we will be back to talk about some other interesting things. Well, hopefully you find it interesting after this short break. You're on Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. You are listening to Joy 94.9 and Fender Bender, the very finest motoring show on Joy 94.9. Now, we are talking all things motoring. And when it comes to the subject of motoring, of course, we have to mention the motor show. The motor show. Everyone who likes cars likes a motor show, don't they? But the Melbourne's had a problem the last couple of years in that it hasn't had one. Yes. So the Melbourne International Motor Show went south through lack of interest from the manufacturers. It was a little bit too expensive. And this has made way for other people to come in and put up their own shows. Now, we knew that the RACV and VACC had launched their idea, which would be run at the Melbourne Showgrounds as a motor show. But now there is a competitor. It's going to be called Motor World, and it's going to be running at the Sandown Raceway in 2015. And we're lucky enough to have on the phone with us the main man, the managing director of Motor World. The gentleman's name is Rod Lockwood, and we are talking to him a little bit about what exactly Motor World is going to be. Now, do we have Rod on the phone?
You certainly do, and good afternoon.
Thank you very much for being with us on Fender Bender, Rod. Now, I spoke to you a little a while ago. Actually, it was Tuesday, so not a little while ago at all. It was earlier this week. Good, yeah, it all blends into one with me. Now, if you wouldn't mind, just tell us a little bit about what Motor World is going to be and what we can look forward to.
Sure, Dan. The Motor World will be a multi-dimensional festival of the automotive industry. So what we want to do is assemble the whole automotive industry. Obviously, it'll be based around the brand, so we want to have all the major car brands there. The difference with the old motor show concept that used to be in Melbourne, that was a static environment based at the Melbourne Exhibition Centre. The difference is we want to get the cars moving. We think people these days want more than just to be able to sit in a car, and we think the brands want more than just building their marketing or building the brand conception. So we think that people want to actually get in the cars, book test drives, and we've also learned that since the demise of the motor show, the brands have become very good at displaying their cars in motion, and that is their main sales technique, to get people in the cars, behind the wheel, and also show the cars in their natural environment, obviously on the road.
So that's exactly what you've done, is that in using Sandown as your venue, you've given them a platform with which to participate in a motor show or festival, yes. But dynamically so the cars can be seen and displayed doing what cars do, and that is moving rather than just sat there on the spot.
Yeah, completely interactive. So on one hand, you'll have the exhibition component where you can see the cars and learn about them, see the technology that they have, and hear about the benefits of all the different models and the add-ons that they have. But then you can see the cars being displayed to you moving, so you can see cornering, braking, handling. And then you can book a test drive with them in both on the track and in the streets.
If you turn up as a paying punter to Motor World, you can get in a car of your choice within reason and actually have a go.
Yes, you can. So we're creating a special app that people can download, and through that they can get details and specifications of the cars, and they can book a test drive.
Is the app available now?
Yes, it is. Yeah. If you
how do we get that?
It's called Motor World Melbourne. And it's available on both Apple and the Android network. If you get on your smartphone, you can certainly download that.
Nice. We'll check that out.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good app, actually.
Can I ask a quick question? When I think Sandown, I think V8 supercars and GT race cars and things like that. Will you actually be using the whole track to let people test cars, or will there be certain areas where they can drive them, maybe the car park or...
Well, because of the sheer volume of cars, I mean, remember, we've got a KPI of around 100,000 people that we want to get there. It's a very achievable number over 5 days. So we're going to need all of the track, we're going to need all of the bitumen areas, and we're going to need the streets around Sandown as well.
So it's a big undertaking by the sounds.
It is. It is. It's very ambitious.
But we've got a long time to think about it, haven't we? It's not this year, it's coming up next year.
That's right. It'll be Wednesday the 25th to Sunday the 29th of November in 2015. We need that long to organise this properly. We need that long to get the brands involved with it. We know that we have to win the confidence of the brands and the aftermarket corporations because we want everyone there. This is a whole festival that will have the industry, including aftermarket, tourism and lifestyle. We've got large education components. We want to have government there with Vic Roads and Vic Pol. So it's an all-encompassing festival.
And you mentioned that you need the confidence of people and the manufacturers. What's the reception been? I mean, when I met you on Tuesday, that was the official launch of Motor World, and that was when you were beginning to take expressions of interest. How has the reception been from both mere mortals like us and the brands?
It's been good. The initial approach, we've obviously been working on this for 18 months already. So we've done all the first round. We did a full due diligence. And I'd say the initial reception was cool. Because, as I said earlier, car brands have learned how to market their cars without motor shows. So we need to get the marketing budgets back established for the motor shows. So we're working with them on that. And then through that period, we've done the first round, and people have been warming to the idea. They like our model, the interactive model. And now that we've done the launch, I think we've ticked the credibility box. The launch showed how that we could do the on-track education. We showed how that we could get the cars to speed in a sensible way so that you can show them with the cornering and braking and safety elements. We also have shown how we can do an exhibition with the setup that we did with the portable structures. And the great thing about Sandown is that it has a 5,000-seat grandstand, but also within that grandstand it has exhibition spaces, so we'll use that area for the aftermarket.
So there's going to be really everyone there. But we do have to talk about the competition. But you think that one of the ways you're going to wipe out the competition is the time of year that you're holding the show.
Look, dates are really important in the events industry. When you look at the autumn period from, let's say, summer onwards, you know, you start with cricket, then you've got the Australian Open tennis. Next year in 2015, you've got World Cup cricket, you've got the Grand Prix. Yeah, there's just so much on, and the ticket-buying public can only afford so much, and they've only got so much time to do things.
Yeah.
You then establish the car racing season. V8 supercars go right through to November. So we're programmed so that we're at the end of the V8 supercars and the Formula One season, and our event will launch summer. And that's an important time for the car industry too. It's leading into the Christmas period with summer holidays. It's a very active car selling period. And we're very confident that we've selected dates which the public will enjoy, because it's a nice time of year. There's a window of opportunity because there's not many events on. And people are starting to think about, driving holidays, et cetera, and we're going to certainly offer that.
All right. Well, it's very exciting. I mean, we've gone through a bit of a motor show drought in Melbourne, and now we're spoilt for choice. So we're very excited, and we'd love to speak to you again closer to the time, Rod, and just to hear how everything's going. And we, of course, the important thing is when you started getting manufacturers on board. If people want to find out more in the meantime, how can they do that?
Well, look, I would recommend that they go on to our website, motorworldmelbourne.com, and that has all the information. People can sign up for the Facebook page and get regular updates as well. And they should also download that app, Motor World Melbourne, and that will also be a conduit to information as well.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us today, Rod. Very exciting stuff, and very best of luck with it all.
Thank you, and I appreciate your interest.
Not at all.
To you.
That was Rod Lockwood, the Managing Director of Motorworld, Melbourne's second or third, depending on how you look at it, motor show.
Very interesting.
You are on Fender Bender. It is Joy 94.9. We're going to have a short break, but we'll be back just after this.
Don't forget to fasten your seatbelt. You are listening to Fender Bender on Joy 94.9.
You are on Joy 94.9. I'm just going to repeat what he said. This is Fender Bender. Good afternoon. Now, earlier we were talking a little bit about the F-250, the truck that is the same size as the universe.
The big truck.
Yes, and we've had a text in from Jess, who says, regarding the F-250, no. I just want to get the right number of no's in there. So I think that's fairly conclusive.
I think she loves it.
Sounds like it.
Secretly a little bit, yes. You've got to love it just a little bit if you hate it that much.
Fair call, Jess. You know, it's not for everyone, and perhaps it will clog up roads. Who knows?
And we've had another message in on 0427JOY949, haven't we, Fian?
We have. Anthony Looker has written in and said, what's our take on car companies who refuse to publish 0 to 100 kilometre an hour times? That's basically a benchmark that most people used to see. You know, how fast, how much performance a car has, because he's saying that Kia told him it would be irresponsible to furnish such data. Personally, I think it's a good thing, because it's a benchmark. It lets you compare vehicles. It's apples with apples. It's okay, this car does it in 7 seconds and this car does it in 7.5. I want the faster one. So that's that. And 100 kilometres an hour is not an illegal speed.
Precisely.
So I don't know how it's irresponsible.
If they were publishing 0 to 3,000 miles an hour, then that would be irresponsible.
That would be slightly irresponsible.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I suppose there is, in this day of regulation and rules and fines, accelerating as fast as a car can go would be regarded as a little bit unnecessary and maybe slightly reckless, but of course it's not. I mean, these cars are designed to do exactly that. So that's that's an interesting question, Anthony. And
thank you for that.
And yeah, it's interesting. If you have to weigh in on that at all, you can get in touch 0427JOY949, or you can email us on air at joy.org.au with something called e-post.
And speaking of 0 to 100 kilometre an our times, we have someone who may have been doing such things in the shitbox rally.
Yeah, those times were quite considerably long times in the case of our car. I think it did eventually get to 100, but it took him most of the week to get there. We recently took a 1981 Mercedes 280 SE on the journey from Perth to Darwin via the Kimberley, Pilborough and up the Gibb River Road.
Right, now why would anyone in their right mind do that, Alistair?
Normal Sunday drive, obviously. Just out in the country and...
Now, if you wanted to take your life in your hands, then you would absolutely do that. But you were doing this for a good cause.
Indeed. So this was part of the Shitbox Rally, which is the largest community fundraiser for the Cancer Council. And this year, as a result of us taking these cars across Australia, raised a little bit over $1.5 million.
Wow.
Fantastic.
For charity. So it was all good fun. But yeah, 7 days across the country, trapped in a very smelly, very old car that had been bought for $500, and we just about killed it.
What was the car?
So Mercedes 280 SE, large, old, very, very strong.
They're beautiful cars.
This one was not quite beautiful. not the first word that jumped to mind.
When they're in pristine condition, I should add.
Yeah. Pristine was, again, not the word that jumped to mind for this one.
This had a very special option, which I don't think you get from the factory.
It was wrapped entirely in chrome gold.
Fantastic.
Glinting in the desert sun.
It was a beautiful
thing. So,
was that a professionally done job, or was it
was a
you
very
and...
unprofessionally done job. Myself and my partner, after a couple of beers, and it did have a few bubbles and wrinkles, but all added to the fun. And especially when covered with sponsors' logos, it was, looked quite good for
fantastic.
The...
Fantastic. I haven't seen images of the car yet, but I must get some off of you, and we will put them on the Facebook page, the Fender Bender Facebook page. Now, how did it all go?
Reasonably well. We did have some difficulties with the car. Obviously, that sort of journey is not something it was designed for. So voltage problems with the alternator. We had the entire exhaust system torn off on the Gibb River Road.
Ooh, wow.
A track which is normally only done by proper four-wheel drive. So unsurprisingly, the bottom of the Mercedes took a bit of a beating and left us with fairly major heating damage for the next 1,000 Ks, driving with no exhaust system. So that was good fun.
I just love
he had
how,
a sore bottom.
Just a touch.
I love how Ali talks about this in such a matter-of-fact way. Like, it's all completely normal behaviour.
That must have been loud if you ripped off the exhaust too.
It was very loud. Very, very loud. It was the ultimate sports exhaust when you didn't want a sports exhaust.
But the dangerous thing about your exhaust falling off is that the exhaust isn't getting all the way out the back of the car, and you can actually start drawing it into leaks through the...
Indeed. So, yeah, we were driving in breathing masks for a while and kind of making sure we didn't have all the windows closed up because, it was quite smelly
as well.
You
would have looked like one of those top fuel dragster drivers, in the full, chemical face and body suits.
Only covered in red dust.
Yeah.
And still picking red dust out of places.
So, now my geography's not great, so it goes from Perth to Darwin?
Last year was Perth to Darwin.
Via Kimberley. How many kilometres is that?
So that was just over 4,000 kilometres over the space of 7 days.
That's a long drive.
There were some incredibly long days. The Gibb River Road especially. We'd been driving for approximately 11 hours and had managed to do our final river crossing of that day, which was the Pentecost River, a crocodile-infested, fast-flowing river in the Northern Territory, which, again, crossing in a two-wheel drive Mercedes, perfectly sane.
Regular Sunday drive. Yeah,
that was fun.
You made a special modification to the Mercedes for that crossing, didn't you?
We did. We had a homemade snorkel, which was a very long length of garden hose taped up from the airbox onto the roof.
The best.
But got us through, wrapped it up in the tarp.
That's impressive.
Many other cars died, but the garden hose worked.
But that's like trying to breathe through a drinking straw.
It wasn't going for any 0 to 100 times through the river either. So
now, was the exhaust still off at that stage?
At that stage, the exhaust was off.
That would have been...
It was...
Wow.
Quite
interesting.
But the end of that day, we'd driven for 11 hours, crossed the river, and then realised we had another 400 kilometres to go. Yes.
How many people enter this?
250 teams this year. And
that's
out
huge.
Of that, I think...
So the obvious question is...
About 30 cars died totally. A lot of cars, including ours, were limping into Darwin at the end, really quite close to death. The gearbox on the Mercedes was screaming beyond the sound of the exhaust.
Bless it.
Yeah.
But the proviso with the shitbox rally is you can't spend more than $1,000 on your vehicle, which is what makes it so, I guess, accessible for so many people.
That's the challenge. And part of the great fun and where I love it is all the bush repairs and getting stuck in the middle of nowhere. And it's a fantastic experience for a great, great cause. And we're going to go again in 2015, this time from Canberra to Townsville.
And how many times will that be? Would that be your third?
This will be our third rally coming up in 2015.
You know that expression, glutton for punishment?
Yeah.
You really are the embodiment of that, aren't you?
I think that sums it up. And because our two cars previously have been relatively safe choices, the Falcon Wagon and then the Mercedes, this year we're doing it in something totally nuts.
Do you already have it?
We can neither confirm nor deny if has been purchasing
it's
done.
It's a Bugatti Veyron.
No, it's under embargo. It's like we received top secret motoring information.
You heard it here first.
Not
on Fender
quite
Bender.
Ready to announce, but it is small, crappy, and may or may not have a roof.
Is it European?
Wow.
It is not European.
Is it Japanese?
I'm saying no more.
It's an MX-5.
It is not an MX-5, unfortunately. You cannot get one of those for under $1,000.
That's true.
I tried.
And is the movement of the Shipbox Rally, is it growing in size? Are people more and more getting on board each year?
Last year was the largest one they've run at the 250 teams, and I think that was just slightly larger than they would like. So this coming year is back down to 200. The sponsorship and the companies getting involved is going from strength to strength. So, I think they'll be targeting well over the 1.5 million in 2015.
That is fantastic.
So why are they limited? I would have thought they'd want more and more competitors.
The competitors are down to logistics of how do you put up 500 people in an outback town with everyone descending at once.
Bivouacs.
Water, the facilities, that sort of stuff. It's not easy. So the guys do a fantastic job in terms of organising it and making sure there's enough beer in town.
I should just say that Fionn was doing the internationally recognised hand signal for drinking your own urine just then.
Wasn't me.
Did it come to that?
Thankfully not. We had enough wine for the evenings. So we didn't have to resort to that.
So, just quickly, what was the best part of the rally for you? Was there any memorable moment or something about it that really...
Yeah, so many. This year, the absolute highlight was getting to Cable Beach for sunset, which involved a really intense day of driving, but managed to have sunset on Cable Beach, standing on top of a gold chrome Mercedes dressed as Where's Wally.
That is very cool.
It's a special moment. Absolutely golden. And on that note, I will leave you all with that image, that wonderful image. It's a bit Priscilla for my liking, actually. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for being with me. We have Alistair, obviously, our resident Shipbox Rally expert. Fionn Torr, thank you so much for being here also.
Thank you.
We hope to see you both back again very soon. And also special mention to Andrew, who has expertly panelled for the show this week. We will be back next week with a vengeance. The main man will be at the helm once he's come back from Germany.
Timmy.
Yeah, we look forward to hearing all of his exploits and adventures in Germany, driving the Mercedes S600 Guard. And until then, you have Little Fish coming up later with Hannah, but before that, it is Critical Hit with Luke. So stick around. Thanks for listening. My name has been Daniel Gardner, as hopefully it will continue to be from this point on. You've been listening to Fender Bender. Until next week, drive safely.
This has been a Fender Bender podcast for Joy 94.9, Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station. See joy.org.au for more details.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with Joy.